this rock so
nice. The music of Rosalie Sorrell's doing the song that Utah Phillips penned back about, oh, what do you think, 1958, 59, Rosalie?
Yeah, it was I first heard it when I came back for Korea, and I think that was right. It was right at the end of the 50s.
And Rosalie Sorrell's, welcome to KVMR.
Thank you.
And
you're
going to be heading our way, appearing at the Odd Fellows Hall in downtown Nevada City this coming Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Nevada City Music Events bringing you here. And of course, you're right on the tails of a wonderful new album called Strangers in Another Country, the songs of Bruce Utah Phillips. Ironically, that one not on it, but it would be tough to put every Utah's own work was what, 4 or 5 CDs of just of what he thought was his best material. What was it like to put this thing together in the wake of our loss of this incredible human being?
Well, I didn't put it together in the wake. I had it finished before he died.
Ah, okay.
I actually was making it with a lot of other people who just loved him to try to get him some money for royalties. And Red House, really incredibly, for a small company, promised to pay the full royalty. And it will be there. If people buy the album, they, you know, Joanna and the family will get some money. That'd be nice.
Indeed. When you were putting it together, well, first of all, we ought to just say that you and Utah go back about as far as any two performers, I suspect.
I knew him before he was a performer. I met him in the middle of the 50s when he was on his way to Korea. His friends had a big party for him. I moved down to Salt Lake with my husband, and they were having a party, and it lasted 4 or 5 days, so we got fairly well acquainted. And when he came back, he'd really begun to write by the time he came back, and I knew him 55 years very well.
And you started, when did you start getting the itch to be a performer?
That's complicated. When I was a kid, I wanted to be an actress, but I got married when I was 19, had 5 children. It didn't seem very likely.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did it for a hobby. I collected old songs, Utah and Idaho, and I made an album maybe in 57 or 58 for Folkways called Folk Songs of Utah and Idaho. It was very plain, just old songs from that I had collected, and I played, and I did concerts around where I was, but I didn't really start until when my marriage broke up in 1966. I didn't know how to do anything but take care of babies and cook and clean, so nobody pays you for that. I decided to do it because somebody asked me to do a recording of some of the things for a bigger company, and I just decided to try to do that, and I've done it ever since.
And you became known as the traveling lady, and I know have been across this country back and forth many, many times.
I drove a million miles.
Really? I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. I guess before we talk a little bit more about the album, I know that you've actually appeared in 2 books by somebody else that we just lost over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Studs Terkel.
Yeah.
Maybe you could just talk a little bit about him.
Oh, I'll tell you a great story about him. I wanted to tell it the other night and I didn't get it in. I forgot to tell it, but it's so good. he was the best interviewer who ever lived, and he interviewed me on the radio a bunch of times, probably 30 or 40 times, sometimes with Bruce. And he always took you to lunch or dinner when he interviewed you. So when he was doing, he put me in a book called, what is the name of that silly book? It's Morning. I Have a Bad Memory in the Morning.
American Dreams Lost and Found?
Yeah, American Dreams Lost and Found. He took me to lunch with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Really?
Who probably wouldn't remember. It was a long time ago. And
wow!
Arnold was not even doing acting yet. He was being a bodybuilder then, and he was very funny and charming, and I thought he was nice. And then we went back, Studs and I went back to work on another thing we were going to do at the studio, and I said, "What do you do that for?" And he said, "What?" In his sneaky way, you know, and I said, "Take me to lunch with Arnold Schwarzenegger." And he said, "Oh, well, Rosalie, Arnold never thinks about anything except being the biggest and the strongest and the best and the richest and the most successful. And you, my dear, have more manfully resisted success than anybody I ever met." And I wanted to see what you'd be like talking to each other.
that's wow. That's something else.
I just love Studs. He could get you to talk about stuff you would never think of talking about, and really coax ideas and things out of you you didn't even know you had. He was great.
I bet you'd love to have a tape of that luncheon.
I wish I did. It was. I mean, I can't remember exactly what God said, but it was just, you know, it was seemed unlikely. I had such different philosophical approach to life and everything else. It was a really odd meeting, you know, to have with somebody.
Our guest is Rosalie Sorrells, who Gamble Rogers I once called the hillbilly Edith Piaf. I wouldn't have thought of that one, but it's great too. Your most recent project, as we were talking about, The Strangers in Another Country, the songs of Bruce Utah Phillips. How did you start putting this thing together?
Well,
When you were going over, there's so much to choose from. How could you narrow it down?
Well, you can't narrow it down. The way I put it together was I just started. If you read the liner notes, which I know nobody ever does anymore, you'll see I was trying to make it a story of his progress in writing and how he liked, as I do, using the words of authors and poets for ideas, and he was like I said in the liner notes, he was like an alchemist. He would take this language, more complicated language, and distill it and turn it into language that the people who were being written about could identify with and understand. He had a really great ear for different cadences and different the way people spoke, and he would just make that music that was available to the people it was about, you know. And he did that always from the get-go. And those songs that he wrote about, first he wrote songs about what happened to him in Korea, and then he wrote songs about his personal life, which he didn't like anybody to sing Rock, Salt, and Nails. He really hated Rock, Salt, and Nails because he thought it was too personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's beautiful. I just think it's one of the greatest songs that ever got written. But he used to get just really grumpy when people would do it at all. And there's somebody making a whole album of nothing but Rock, Salt, and Nails being sung by other people. I'm sure that's going to make him come back and haunt somebody.
I'm looking at a collection right now of 17 different versions.
That's good. I'm on it, right?
Twice, actually.
Yeah, I think that's who it is.
And it was one of this is actually one of our broadcasters here who has just gathered these collections together.
Oh, well,
so
then
we could.
That's not who. This is something that's coming out, I think, as a record.
Ah, okay.
And there's another collection that's several different artists doing different songs of his, and that's a guy Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think John McCutcheon may be involved with that one, or at least contributing a song or so.
Yeah, there's. It seems like a. I haven't heard it yet, but I know I'm on it, and there's a bunch of other people sound like it would be a really nice collection.
And yours is not only just a collection of songs, but there's also some wonderful spoken word on Strangers in Another Country.
Yeah, well, and that's the whole idea of the record. And I've gotten three reviews now that attribute those spoken pieces to Bruce. You know, they clearly didn't read the liner notes or even really listen. That those people are Kenneth Patchen and Malvina Reynolds and Julius Lester's piece is the one that knocks me out the most, and that's from back in the 60s. Julius Lester is a really great black poet with a fantastic literary gift. It's the Revolutionary Mandate number one.
Right, that's
so
it.
Now is not the time to take your friends for granted and assume they will always be there, because they may not be. And I just, every time I listen to it, I burst into tears, because that's exactly what happened. I read that the night before he died and sang the song on Michael Feldman's What Do You Know, and some Todd Moss called me the next morning to tell me he died, and I said, what time did he do that? And he said, about 9:30, and I said, that's when I was singing that song to all those people.
Mm.
It was very eerie, very eerie.
And you, I believe you
ghost
all...
Ghost story for you.
Yeah, and then we spoke with you that next day, and you actually did talked about that particular poem, too.
Oh, yeah. Those poems are poems and pieces that I turned him on to, and then he would just use that idea and write a song, and then it would come right out of it. And I was trying to show that in the progress of his writing. He had such a really rich sense of the literature of this country and the complexity of it, and he really used it to the max.
And we definitely all miss him here, I'll tell you. But at least seeing works like this come out become an archive of his archives of sorts.
Well, you know what? The Far West Folk Alliance gave me a little grant to make a further archive. I'm going to put all the songs I've recorded of his in all the different contexts on one side of it, and then all the people I can find who've recorded them, and then I'm going to put the ones that I remember that haven't been recorded in it, so that people have access to it. And I'll just, you know, when I'm not on the road and I have time to really sit and think, I'll collect those all up into a more accessible form with the, you know.
And there's already a Rosalie Sorrell's archive at UC Santa Cruz, I understand.
There is. Isn't that neat? I get to be in there with Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Kenneth Patchen.
Right, the Beat Generation Archives.
Yeah.
And I also noticed that you received an honorary Doctor of Fine Arts degree from the University of Idaho.
Yeah.
And I think that's well deserved after.
My children call me Dr. Mom.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And that was back about 8 years or so ago. So now that you must have tenure.
I guess Pat Sky told me I could get a job with that.
Yeah, I don't.
He says that's a real degree. You can get a job.
Yeah. And of course, one of your albums was up for a Grammy at that just a couple of years ago. And
yeah.
You've been doing a lot of storytelling stuff as well.
Yeah, I've made 24 albums. And I'm on about 25 compilations. I'm amazed when I look at all of that.
And when you did you ever imagine that happening when you took off in the mid '60s to become to be part of the trade, I guess, as Utah would say?
No, I didn't. I had no agenda except to make enough money to feed those kids.
And we're speaking with Rosalie Sorrell. She's going to be at the Oddfellows Hall in Nevada City this coming Saturday night, 8 o'clock show. It's Nevada City Music Events show. And I guess when... So one thing that I think you've made real clear, and that is folks who pick up a copy of Strangers in Another Country would do well to read the liner notes, because yeah. Obviously you put a lot of care and love in those liner notes.
Yeah, and only one time, if you listen to it all the way through, you'll see it's a story. You know, it goes from one song to the other. I know people don't like, they only want to listen to one thing at a time and not in order. but it really is the story, and I worked hard on trying to tell it, so. I'd love it if people would listen to it like that once.
And one song that I enjoyed hearing was I had a Mule, which I believe was the first song that Bruce wrote that was ever recorded by anybody, and that one I believe was by the Limelighters.
Yeah, and after that, Debbie Reynolds recorded that. He'll come back and get me for telling that too. But I thought that was really funny.
I knew somebody else like that had recorded it, and we've been looking for a version of that. That if that one ever surfaces, that'll be a fun one to have.
Well, I love the way it came out on that. There's about 15 people in the studio all playing and swapping verses and laughing and carrying on. That's the way that song ought to sound. I love it.
Would you mind, why don't we play that one and then come back and talk just a little bit more? Would that be okay?
Okay, fine.
Here we go, then. This is If I Had a Mule.
I had a mule and his name was Jack.
Here it is.
I had a mule and his name was Jack. I had a mule and his name was Jack. When I climbed upon his back, he damn near died of a heart attack.
Sing in the spring, sing in the fall, sing when I hear my baby bawl. Sing all day and all night too. Hush, you're crying, I'll sing for you.
Rosalie, that's not, listen to this. I had a parrot and he was green. I had a parrot and he was green. Stupidest bird you ever seen. He could swear like a big marine.
Sing in the spring, sing in the fall. Sing when I hear my baby bawl. Sing all day and all night too. Hush your crying, I'll sing for you.
Canary and she was blue. I had a canary and she was blue. I'll tell you all my little canary could do. She could play the harp, she could go to tune.
Sing in the spring, sing in the fall. Sing when I hear my baby bawl. Sing all day and all night too. Once she cry, I'll sing for you.
Now, I got a bear and he sings blues. I had a bear and he sings the blues. He hocked his pants, he hocked his shoes. He hocked everything but his press review.
Sing in the spring, sing in the fall. Sing when I hear my baby bawl. Sing all day and all night too. Hush your cry and I'll sing for you.
And Bruce wrote a lot of verses to it, and a lot of other people wrote them. One of them was Ray Conrad. He was a ski bum. He wrote a lot of great ski songs. And he wrote some bar songs that were kind of raunchy. Probably couldn't put them on this record. He wrote about 100 verses to this one because he loved it so much. And I'll tell you, this one, I mean, my two grandsons, great-grandsons, my gosh, they're great-grandsons, they like it the best. It's Isaiah and Devin, and they like dinosaurs more than anything. I like this verse because of the rhyme, though. I mean, who could think you would take a word like this and rhyme it four times? I had me a brontosaurus, brontosaurus, name of Horace. We played golf, he caddy for us, singing high tenor in the clubhouse chorus.
Singing the spring, singing the fall, sing when I hear my baby bawl. Sing all day and all night too, as you're crying, I'll sing for you.
I got a good one for you. Well, I got a little shrimp, a dinky, pinky, stinky shrimp. He tried to make love to a navy blimp, and ever since then he's walked with a limp.
Sing in the spring, sing in the fall, sing when I hear my baby bawl. Sing all day and all night too, hush your crying, I'll sing for you.
We'll go on back to my favorite of all of Bruce Phillips' songs. Oh, Utah wrote this one about a giraffe. And I love giraffes, too. I love to watch them walk around with their head out in front and their legs catching up. Well, I had me a tall giraffe. Oh, yes, I had a tall giraffe. He liked to sing, he liked to laugh, and he lived on beer and bubble bath.
Sing in the spring, sing in the fall, sing when I hear my baby bawl. Sing all day and all night too, hush your crying, I'll sing for you.
Well, I've had everything short and tall. Yes, I've had everything short and tall. But fat or skinny, big or small, I bet you my baby is the best of all. Sing in the spring, sing in the fall, sing when I hear my baby bawl. Sing all day and all night too, hush your crying, I'll sing for you. Sing in the spring, sing in the fall, sing when I hear my baby bawl. Sing all day and all night too, hush your crying, I'll sing for you.
A lot of love went into that song, I can tell.
Yeah.
Boy, what a wonderful fun tune that is.
Yeah, that's Mad Cat Ruth, the harmonica player, doing the juice harp on it that opens it and closes it.
And that's perfect for Bruce too, who just loved the sort of the feeling of street musicians and people playing strange instruments and what have you.
Yeah.
I remember every week, seems like almost every week on Loafer's Glory, he'd bring in some strange cassette tape that he had gotten somewhere of an odd performer, as it were. He loved it.
Yeah, well, we had that in common. I really love odd more than almost anything.
Now, are you living up in Idaho now?
Yeah, I was born there. I live in a cabin my father built with his hands on land that my grandfather bought the year I was born, 75 years ago.
Wow. And the house is still going strong.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere. Neither am I. Yeah, I mean, I go around, but I'm never going to change where I live.
And you don't do as many performances as you were doing a few years back. You were sort of going to take a retire, I thought.
I was planning on it. In fact, I was dead set on it, but I just don't seem to be able to pull it off. By the way, I made that album in about 6 different places. I went all over the country to do it.
And which gave you, of course, a whole assortment of musicians to work with.
Yeah, that was the point. I wanted to do it with people I knew just loved it. I mean, the McGarrigle sisters drove all the way down from Montreal to New York to do that Green Rolling Hills,
which we played earlier.
Yeah.
And it just seems like the love for this guy is just, it's everywhere.
That's right, and well deserved.
Indeed. Rosalie Sorrells is our guest, again appearing at the Oddfellows Hall in Nevada City this coming Saturday night, a Nevada City music event. 8 o'clock is the showtime, and she'll be celebrating Strangers in Another Country, the songs of Bruce Utah Phillips on the Red House record label. And I guess why we'll leave the conversation with by playing the Revolutionary Mandate number 1 that you had mentioned, and then Talkin' Wolverine 14, and maybe you could tell us why you put the mandate there, and then why you ended with that song.
Well, for one thing, I recorded that in 1976 or 77, somewhere around there, with a really good band. I mean, those are all people I've worked with for a long time, and I just wanted everybody to know that I wasn't going to be morose at the end of it, you know. And I love the song. I just think it's a great piece of writing, and I love the way it came out, and I wanted to bring the energy up a little bit at the end, just to remember how much he loved trains and how good he was at writing about them, and I put a little cheer into there that didn't want to end on a low note.
All right. Well, Rosalie, thank you very much for taking time out to join us here this morning and talk about Strangers in Another Country.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I hope everybody gets it, because it's a good memory of him, I think.
Okay. Thanks for joining us once again.
You bet.
Rosalie Sorrells joining us from her home that her father built 75 years ago up in Idaho. And here's how she ends the album.
These are not the times to take your friends for granted, to assume that they will always be there. They may not be. And if you wait until the next time to tell them that they are very special to you, you may wait until someone calls you and says that so-and-so's body was found beneath the bricks of a dynamited building, or so-and-so was blown like water from a fountain over a midnight highway, or so-and-so was shot while he slept. Therefore, it is hereby mandated by the poets and artists and musicians who are responsible for the spirit and soul of the revolution that when you finish this poem, you are to call your brothers and sisters and in your own way make them know that you love them. And because of their love, you have become more you. Let them know. 5 minutes from now, you may never have the opportunity.